tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Wow. So I'm still just enjoying that great wave of joy that arose in the room when the accumulated figure came out that everyone has helped make happen in different ways, and that this is going towards, it's not just raising money, but it's raising money to fight to purchase land that will be cared for and that will be used for practice, for monastics and for lay community. It's very, very auspicious and beautiful. And so I have a lot of mudita, and I'm really enjoying the vibe here in the room, the collectiveness and the joy, yeah. And, you know, we were hearing earlier about, well, first of all, many people chose to take the five precepts, the three refuges and the five precepts. Those precepts or those training precepts are an amazing support for our practice. Without them, we can expend a lot of energy, but then we lose it again. And then we can do good, but then we do harm. And so we're keeping on. It's like having a hole in your bucket. You know, it never gets filled. But with sila, with ethics and care for each other and ourselves, then that there's a filling of the container with goodness and wholesomeness. And I'm just very aware of the qualities, the good energy that's being generated by everyone here, individually and collectively. So each person who's here and also online who's joining from the screen over there, hi. You know, it's you're each bringing your own presence and goodness and generosity and interest and maybe learning or maybe sharing. So each person, each individual is bringing this. And then together there's this field of goodness being created. It's very beautiful, powerful. And these things don't make the news, you know. The news has got we get a lot of bad news. Pretty bad, but there are good things happening, like right now. And so let's just take a moment to really enjoy that, celebrate it, that each of us are part of this goodness that is being generated right now in the world. And it's a field, it's a force, it's energy, it's not nothing. And no one of us could do that on our own, but each of us can do something. And then together, collectively, there's this power of goodness that's generating. It's beautiful. And there's this word punya. The Buddha uses the word punya, Pali word, which has been translated in English as merit. I always feel that's a very limited, a bit impoverished translation. I actually don't know in Thai. I guess you actually just say punya in Thai and then you just know what it is. And in English we have this word merit, which to me sounds a bit smaller than what it actually is. So I just want to explore that quality of punya a little bit with you. And it's an energy, a good energy, just as we're experiencing today, that arises through good action. It arises through not following harmful intentions that may arise. So we don't necessarily start off, you know, all just good thoughts and being beautiful. You know, there's things that we struggle with. There can be ill will in the mind, and there can be maybe a feeling of fear or stinginess even, and then holding back, and then we recognize, oh, that's painful. Yeah, I don't want to follow that. And then we see whether we can just behave a little differently to our old patterns. And I don't know if some of you probably have, you know, come from a very generous culture, I know that, and some of us don't. So there may be a moment where you remember the shift from feeling, for me it's a very, very tangible moment, the shift from being a bit stingy, a bit fearful of giving, thinking, being a bit suspicious of giving. I was raised that way. And then realizing, oh no, giving is, it's enriching, it's beautiful, it's freeing, it's a relief. Even if you don't have very much, just that movement of from trying to keep for myself to wanting to give freely. It's a beautiful shift of the heart. It's a whole life change, actually. It changes your life when you realize that there's that letting go. And it was, for me, it was in a monastery where I had that moment where I recognized that these people aren't asking anything from me. They're giving me everything. They're giving me a place to sleep. They're giving me food. They're giving me Dharma teachings. Got access to a fantastic library. And this is in Amravati in England. And they're not asking anything. And then that just brought out this shift of just wanting to give and just realizing the freedom and the relief, actually, of being generous. So I think everyone here probably is already way into that. But it's so moving from the thoughts of maybe smallness and holding back into opening up and giving and stepping into this experience is it that generates punya. So even just not following unwholesome thoughts generates punya. And then when we, you know, actually generate good, when our mind is more geared, or when we take care of generating good thoughts and good intentions, that's punya being made then. And then acting on those, more punya. And then, don't stop there, because it's not just that. That seems like it would be enough, you know. Then we've restrained the unwholesome, we've cultivated the wholesome, and we've acted on the wholesome. The gifts have been given, the generosity has happened, okay. But don't stop there, because then we need to recollect that, take that in. I think this is something that we can miss, really taking in the punya, taking it into your heart, letting yourself be filled by the goodness of your practice. Take a moment, breathe it in. Feel it fill you. So I like to think of punya as an energy or a kind of a nectar. I experience it as a kind of a nectar that just fills your heart and fills your being. And if you take it in that way, it's quite wonderful. And it's not indulgent. It's not bad or indulgent to take that in, to take in the goodness of your generosity and your ethics and your good conduct. You know, some of us maybe learnt that you shouldn't think like that. You get big-headed if you think that way. But it's not about getting big-headed. You get big-hearted. You let your heart take in that all that goodness and let it be stretched and nourished and filled by that. And then when we're filled, when we feel the filling of that goodness in our own being, then we can share it. Share it generously for the benefit of all beings. All beings in all directions. So in the suttas, the Buddha actually only refers to punya as benefiting those in the hungry ghost realm. So he says it specifically supports beings in the hungry ghost realm. And, you know, there are people... There are beings, you know, there's the realms that the Buddha speaks about, the different cosmological realms. So a place that people go to that is a place of endless craving. So it's a very, very difficult and painful place to be. But that can also be experienced here in this world. There are people who are caught in that mind state right here in this world, right now. And so the sharing of merit is like, and it's also for me that sense of nectar. It's like you're sharing that nectar of goodness to relieve the craving, the endless craving of those caught in addiction, in endless wanting. And this society, you know, it's really set up to encourage wanting, to discourage contentment and satisfaction. It talks about satisfaction, promises satisfaction, but it's one of those kind of hollow satisfactions that doesn't last very long. So the Buddha is pointing us to this. He's not saying you'll get everything you want. He's saying when you let go of that wanting, it's just perfect. It's just perfect like this. It's perfect in its imperfection. Life becomes perfect in its imperfection. So we're not trying to become perfect, and we're not trying to make the world perfect. And we're not, you know, expecting that, you know, as we practice and progress on the path, the world's going to get easier and nicer. Everyone's going to be nice to us. It doesn't really work like that. But how we meet the world changes. And in that, in a way, everything changes. So, you know, I'm speaking about the world. And so what, you know, how is the world created? There's the news, there's what we hear, there's the media, the world news. There's a lot going on the world news right now. And then there's our world, you know, maybe our family, our community, and what's going on there. Probably not perfect. Probably a few challenges out there. And then there's our inner world and how we meet our experience inside. So if the way we meet our experience inside is full of judgment and wanting and not wanting, if we look inside and we feel that we're essentially wrong, there's something wrong with us, we're bad or we're wrong, or I'm the best, I'm better than everyone else. Some people have that one going on. You know, both of those are places of suffering. They're places of suffering. So, you know, the world, in a way, the world begins right here in our experience, in how we meet it. So right now we're all gathered together and we're doing this wonderful thing together, almsgiving and generating actual material support and, you know, feeding each other and others out, you know, each other, all of a bigger each other, and then generating this good energy. So the world is being created right here. We're creating this is part of the world. We're creating this in the world right now. And that's true all the time. So what we are doing inside, how we meet ourselves inside, our experience inside, and how we relate to those around us is creating the world. So this is important. And how we pay attention also, this is part of creating the world. So what we ignore, what we attend to, what we get absorbed into, what we dismiss, you know, this is all part of how the world gets created, where energy is put, where we put energy into. And attention is energy. Attention is energy. So it's really important to notice in your life, where is the energy going? Where is your attention going? And, you know, there are so many distractions, very easily accessible distractions. So it's And you know, those distractions, particularly the ones on your phone or on your laptop, they're designed to they're generated by your attention. They're designed to get your attention. People are getting rich from your attention. So be careful who you're paying attention to and what you're paying attention to. And the Buddha is really inviting us to, you know, pay attention to our body, not just the mind, but the body, to know this body, be with this body. So I just want to ask right now, just for a moment, what does it feel like, that body of yours? Just in there, inside. How is it? What is your relationship with your body? Is there a friendship? Are you friends? Or is it something you endure? Or are you somewhere a little bit aloof from the body? The mind is floating around somewhere above the body. That can happen. So the Buddha's encouraging us to pay attention to the body, which is a most profound teacher. It's teaching us all the time. It's teaching the Dhamma all the time, the body. And to pay attention to the feelings that are going on in this body, not just emotions, but pleasant feeling, painful feeling, neutral feeling, feeling tone, the sensations, to be aware. Because when we're not aware, we have an unpleasant sensation and then we react. We try and get away from it, or we blame somebody else for it, or we distract ourselves. And then we have a pleasant sensation, and then we love that, want more of that, get more of that. And then we start to lose perspective on the cost of that, you could say, the repercussions of that. And a large part of our experience is neutral sensation, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, nothing in particular. So that's, we kind of go to sleep on that, we ignore that. So and then when we bring careful attention to our experience, our direct experience, how there's a painful feeling, I want to get rid of it. The painful feeling isn't bad, it isn't negative, it's just painful feeling. And then there's this extra piece of pushing away. And the pleasant feeling isn't necessarily good. Some are, some aren't. Isn't necessarily good, but there's this grasping. And so we need to know, we need to be clued in to what's going on here in this body that's teaching us all the time. A neutral feeling that we ignore, you know, generating ignorance, ignoring. So to get familiar with this body as a teacher, what is it teaching us? It's teaching us about constant change. The feelings in this body right now I'm experiencing, changing all the time. The body itself, you know, we just ate a lovely meal, and that changes our body. We're changed by that. It's being nourished by that. So change is going on all the time in the body, never stops. A breath. By its nature, it's change. So this is a teaching that's going on right here with your body. Your best teacher is right there with you every day, 24/7. It's there with you. It's part of you. And then recognizing the different moods that pass through the mind, like the weather. Sometimes uplifted, sometimes depressed, sometimes fearful, sometimes bright and strong. We have all of these different moods that go through the mind, like just like the weather changes out here, all changing all the time. And then we take them as me. Oh, this is me. I'm this. I'm. You know, whatever particular mood may be going through, we think it's who we are. But we need to notice that those moods are just changing. They're just changing. It's there for a while. And then it changes. And then there's another one. And that's there for a while, and then that changes, and that we might have certain leanings, and then we can guide our attention towards the more wholesome and the more beneficial, and then it changes the habits of the mind. So, if we have a tendency to feel a bit hopeless or a bit down, then we need to take care of our mind. You know, we need to take care of spending time with good people, taking in really wholesome stuff, wholesome information through that phone or laptop or through a company, and doing good and recognizing the good that we're doing. And then that starts to change the moods of the mind, to get more open and uplifted. And then the content of the mind, the thoughts that are going on, those endless thoughts that go on and on and on, all sorts of thoughts going on in the mind. Just to get to know what are the tendencies, what's the volition of those thoughts. Are they wholesome? Are they unwholesome? Are they leading out of suffering or into more complexity? And recognizing we have some choice. We can't always, we can't always choose what thoughts are arising, but we can choose where we put our attention. So attending to that which is wholesome, and also attending carefully to that which is unwholesome, in that we don't encourage it, we don't strengthen it. So the Buddha urges us to frequently pay careful attention. Frequently pay careful attention to what is going on here and now. Not just now and again, but frequently, throughout the day, checking in, seeing what's going on, which direction, where's this leading? So we don't want to get micromanaging about it. It's good also to have the big view of where we want to sort of aim towards. But we also need to check in and see what's going on. And as we do that, as we continue to generate goodness and to share the goodness and to hold back on the unwholesome, redirect our attention, and then also through our meditation practice, to generate wholesome states in the meditation. And sometimes, sometimes it's wholesome, and sometimes we're just sitting through difficult stuff, sitting through painful memories or difficult things that are left in our body and mind from past challenges. But that's also really, really beneficial. So the Buddha speaks about refrain from doing harm. It's like the nutshell of the Buddha's teaching. Refrain from doing harm. Do good, which you're doing an awesome job of, I have to say. Do good and purify the mind. So that purifying the mind is what happens in the meditation. Sometimes it's beautiful, sometimes it's hard. Don't worry, it's purifying the mind, it's good. And it leads to greater spaciousness, happiness, peace and well-being. And also, when we're doing it together in this way, we become community, we become Sangha that supports each other. So, this coming together is to support the establishment of a monastery. And at the heart of a monastery are monastics, obviously. And at the heart of monastic life is the practice. It's the ethical practice, the meditation practice, the practice of giving and sharing the Dhamma, sharing, we share with each other requisites and so on. So this is at the heart of this beautiful coming together. So I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful to my venerable brothers here, Ajahn Kovilo and Ajahn Nisabo, for their real brotherliness. So I wouldn't always use that term. I wouldn't assume to say that with Lungpo Pasano, a little different. He's my elder, Lungpo. I really appreciate our brother monastics really recognizing the value and the importance of the fourfold assembly. You know that the bhikkhus and the bhikkhunis, we all are part of the community as the lay women and lay men. We're all part of the community. So this is a blessing and a gift, and I'm just really happy to be here with you all.